I'm here to introduce you to this last talk of this evening, and this will be Noé López talking about GNU Geeks and how that affects software freedom. So everybody give him a round of applause, please.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. So yeah, my name is Noé López. I'm a student currently in the HfD Stuttgart, which is University of Applied Sciences of Technology. And I'm here in Stuttgart only for an exchange year. And usually, I study in France at Epitech. And in my free time, I really like to do free software. And so that's why I'm here today to talk about it, what it means to have free software, how it's defined, and most importantly, how you can actually use your freedom. So today, we have a tiny plan. We're going first to have some context, right, some definitions. Then I'm going to tell you about how you can do practically software freedom. Then I'll talk about Geeks as one of the solutions that you can use to get these freedoms. And then tiny conclusion. So let's get started. Also, my talk might go over the limit because I'm going to do a demo, and I'm really sorry I put 20 minutes. I didn't really know before, but I hope it's fine for you. You should stay a tiny bit later. So anyways, the four essential software freedoms are the ones that define free software today. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish, which is the most important, of course. You can do what you want with the program that you receive. Already, this is not the case for all programs. For example, when you play a video game or when you take any program that has terms of services, you cannot do anything you want with it. Freedom one, which is freedom to study how the program works and change it. So basically, you get the source code and you can modify it and you can look at it. Freedom two is redistribute copies, and freedom three is distribute modified copies, which is just as important. The two, in my opinion, are kind of similar, but I guess they deserve to be separated. Okay, and these four core freedoms give us today the ecosystem of free software. So we have free software licenses, which are the little files of text that you put with your software, and it gives the user to which you give that software all of these freedoms. Then you have the free software packages, which are basically anything that has a free software license. And you have the free software distributions, which are distributions of free software. So they take a lot of different applications and services, and they put it together, and they make an operating system, usually. And now you can see I put some little question marks. What does this mean? It means that, well, in theory, it might be free software, but maybe it hides something dirty that might not make you not want to use it. So let's see some example. Linux, for example, is free but has non-free firmware and binary blobs. What does this mean? When Linux tries to use my Wi-Fi card, there's code that runs on the Wi-Fi card, which is firmware. And this code actually is not necessarily free. You cannot necessarily look at it. And this is something that is often hidden from you when you use a normal distribution. They don't tell you this, I guess. Which is why you have alternatives like Linux Libre that removes all the blobs, but then of course you have the Wi-Fi. Firefox is another one, has DRM, and runs non-free JavaScript, of course. DRM is the worst offender here. It means that, well, you get content and you can't use it how you like it. Systemd is maybe a controversial take, but for me, it's too big. It has many, many different components, but at the same time, they all depend on each other, and it's not quite clear why. And so it's very hard to use them independently, except for the few tiny ones that are written independently. You have to instead make your own independent component if you want to replace that. And then lastly, last example is Chardet. So Chardet is kind of a little story that went around. It's a library to detect character sets in a file, and it had a license, a free software license. But the maintainers, they didn't really like the license. They wanted something that gave them more freedom. And so they rewrote it using AI. And it begs the question, well, AI is trained on free software, but suddenly you're putting a different license at what the training data was, and also is it ethical to use AI? This is not what I'm willing to go about in this talk, but I think it deserves to be said that maybe it's free software, maybe it's not, nobody's quite sure. So you don't really want it. And so you have this software, you're not really sure, are they completely free or not? So you have the free software distribution guidelines made by GNU, and these tell you actually, this is what's free and this is what's not, what you can put in your free distribution or not, so to make sure that your users keep all their freedom. So all sources must be available under a free software license. This is basic. This is also means no binaries that are compiled. You don't know how. You always need to have a source. It must not contain non-free firmware. As I said, for example, Linux kernel, because it says free, but it has non-free. Non-functional data does not have to be free software. I guess you could say it's not software, so culturally it has different rules, and that's fine. Also, you can have trademarks, and then no malware. And in this definition, DRM counts as malware, spyware counts as malware as well, so those telemetry and these kinds of things. And so now that we got this out of the way, these definitions, I can present GNU Geeks. It's a GNU Linux distribution that is focused on making you free. That's why I'm presenting it today. But Linux only sometimes, because you can actually run also the GNU Herd, which is another kernel. And it's fully free software, thanks to the free software distribution guidelines. It's made in Guile Scheme. This is very interesting, especially for the people who might have used Emacs before. They love the Lisp, they love the configuration that it gives you. This is the same kind of power, which means Guile Scheme is an extension language. And so for the user, it's very powerful that you can just write your own script to define your own packages, to define your own services, or to play around with all the packages that are in the distribution. You don't have to modify the code of Geeks itself. You can just extend it via a new script in Scheme, and it is very modular. And then it's a sibling of NixOS. If you know NixOS, Geeks was created around 13 or 14 years ago now as a fork of NixOS. But only the daemon came from NixOS, and then the other part was written in Scheme, because Nix usually uses Nix now. All right, so now I'm going to do a little bit of a demo to present how I can use these freedoms that are given to me by the licenses, how I can actually use them with Geeks. So the freedom zero is freedom to run. And Geeks already excels in this. Usually, you would do apt install, or you would have to download some binary. In Geeks, it's even better. You can do Geeks share. So basically, you don't have to install anything. You can just do Geeks share, and you put the name of the app that you want. So I'm going to be making a Sudoku app here, and then you just run it. I'm just at this quickly because servers are down. But it will give you a shell with that package. And this is already quite useful because you don't have to install it. You can really just use it how you want. That's the first thing. Now we have a Sudoku. And then what if you're trying to run a really old program? Maybe it's using Python 2. Maybe the libraries don't exist anymore, are not maintained. You can't just apt install those dependencies that you need. Well, Geeks has a very nice thing called Geeks Time Machine, which will allow you to go back in time to any commit that Geeks existed. So you can go back to a time where Python 2 was still the norm, and you get a whole environment with those libraries that allow you to run that program. Otherwise, it would be a nightmare to try to assemble the different libraries, especially, for example, if you have Python and this one Python library also requires a system library that is not provided by pip. Now you don't have the wrong version, and it's a nightmare. With Geek's time machine, just go back in time. And the final thing is fearless experimentation with rollbacks. So you might know about atomic upgrades, which is become maybe common with Fedora Silverblue and NixOS. Basically, when you update your system, when you install a package, it creates a new generation. It doesn't modify files. It creates symlinks. And if your system breaks, then you can just say, well, I go back to before, and you get exactly what you had before. It doesn't break anymore, and you can retry something else. Now to freedom one, which is the freedom to see and modify. And this can be quite complicated depending on your package. With Geek, already you have to find the source. So you might go on Google and search the name of package, but it's sometimes kind of difficult. You never know where it is. Sometimes it's hidden in Git repositories that are not quite easy to find. So with Geek, you have a simple command, Geek build dash dash source, which will give you the source of a package. So say I want to modify or see what GNOME pseudocode does. Well, I just run Geek build source and I get my archive. And so I can extract it and look at what's inside, and I can read the code. Perfect. Now, another thing is Geek's edit, which will show you. Well, I can do it like this. That's a skill issue. Which will open you in your editor the definition of that package. So if you want to get really where the source is from or what build steps you need to do after you get the source, you can look here. But this we will not use today. And then finally, you have your source. Maybe you've made some modifications. Now you want to build it. But you still have to get all your dependencies, right? Well, thanks to Geek, you can do geekshare-d, which will give you simply sudoku, all the dependencies of the package in a shell, and now I can actually build it. So let's try it. Let's try to modify something and build it. So I maybe want to change the title, right, and do something very simple. And in the title, it says something like select difficulty. And I change it, hello TDF. And now I want to build it. So what I can do, either get the dependencies, or I can do something even simpler. Since Geek already knows how to build that package, I can say Geek build with source. And this will make Geek use the right source and build it automatically. Right, so I've selected my source, I want to build it, I just do it like this. And then I wrote the file probably very wrong, so I'll just get it like that. Alright. And this is just going to build it. So now I have this brand new package, which is made just for me with my modifications, my local checkout. So I can go to GeekShare and launch it. And suddenly you will see hello TDF right there. And that's just how easy it was. So if you try to run packages like this before, you should know that it can be very hard. And so now let's go to freedom 2 and 3. Since they are very similar, I kept them in the same slide. I have my modified version now, and I want to give it to someone, right? But they don't have my source code. What can I do? Well, what can I do? I can use Geek publish, which basically lets me run a local substitute server. So anyone else with Geek can type in my IP and get my signing key, and they get my packages. This is a bit involved, right? You have local substitute sharing, which just means I have the package, and if someone else asks for it, it will automatically give it if you're on the local network. But most interestingly are the two last, GeeksPack and Channels. So GeeksPack will take my package and is going to turn it into a tarball. And this tarball I can send to anyone, even if they are not running Geeks, and they will be able to run it because it comes with all of the dependencies that I used. And so it kind of works by itself. It's all, that's kind of a wrapper that kind of like an app image, basically. So anyone can use it. And now it's building it. And so I'm not going to demo it further. Oh, PDF. The last thing is channels. So as you might have noticed, I used Geeks build with some kind of option to use my source. But what would be even better if I had an actual package that when I use Geeks, I can just put the name of the package and it will use my modified version, right? So how you do this in Geeks is, of course, with Guile Scheme, and it's simpler than you might think. So all you have to do is make a scheme file and define your package. So here I can do package inherit, gnome sudoku, and I will input my new source. So in that case, it's a local source, and it will be a dot, or I can put absolute path and recursive true. And this is pretty much all it takes. You do have to import some modules, Geeks packages, Geeks the expression, and GNU packages, GNOME. And now, Geeks will be able to use that file with the F command, and it's basically going to do the same thing as before. And I can go further with this. So this is an actual package definition, and this is the same thing that's in for every package that you use. So it's as if I'm extending the package manager by myself, and I could use a source if I want to publish the code. I'll use a Git source. So I'll just do something that looks like this, and then put it in my actual source, or I can add some patches, etc. And then once I'm all done with making my package and I want to share it, I can just share that file. That file is enough to build the package. Or I can put it in a channel, which is if I also want to publish an update to that package, I can just use a channel and basically look like this. Let's put it full screen. It's just a collection of the same files with more packages inside. It's a bit big. And then anyone else can just do add that channel to their configuration on Geeks pool, and they will have the packages that I made. So really anyone can make packages, modify them, and share them. And in fact, a lot of people are doing so. And lastly, I just want to talk about the community, which in my opinion is one of the most important things of free software. Free software should always be made with respect and fairness. That is, if I come and make a patch for you, you should not shout at me, you should not discriminate me. And this is what in Geeks is very nice, is that we have a very flat hierarchy of people. So you are a contributor or you are not. And that's pretty much it. And the people who can push, we do not call them maintainers. They are just contributor with a commit bit. And so everyone is equal. And even better, we do not vote. We make consensus. Everyone has to agree on what we do. And you do not have to have the commit bit to agree or disagree or propose changes to fundamental ways how Geeks works. You use a consensus-based process. Basically, anyone who has made changes to Geeks and has joined a team is part of that process and has to be part of that process. And so I can show some examples here. So it's a pretty new process, about a year old. And so, for example, if I take the last one, Someone proposed we should update our package deprecation policy and our processes. So now they made a draft, then everyone discussed it with a lot of text, of course. And at this point, people say, I disagree with this, we should do this instead. And there's a lot of discussion about it with a shared goal in mind. And after some time, at most 2 months, everyone says, well, this is the final version. I agree, or I don't. And if anyone doesn't agree, it's off. But as you can see, even with 80 people currently, I think, that are part of that process, we are still able to make actual changes, for example, for getting releases. Some of them don't make it because, well, they are maybe too political or too, maybe just people can't agree on it. So, for example, rename the default branch. It was master, it wanted to be main, but some people disagreed. It's not a big deal. And so that's what's nice about the community. Really, everyone is equal. And that's pretty much it. So now I go to the conclusion. You can try Geeks today at geeks.gnu.org. You don't have to install it as an operating system. It also just works as a package manager. If you just want to use Geeks Share or Geeks Time Machine, these kind of things, you do not need a Geeks system. You can apt install Geeks and then use these commands for yourself. That's a very good idea, I think. And so, yeah, you can use these things to use your freedom. And yep. So also, here's where you can find me. And that was it for my talk. Thank you.
So thank you very much for the talk. So are there any questions here in the audience? Okay, let me.
Are you running Geeks on your laptop?
Yep, so? This is Geeks. As you can see, it just looks like normal GNOME because I have it running GNOME. But it can run, of course, KDE, all that you want. It's actually very configurable because you configure it in Scheme, which I do not talk about here because it's not so much related to freedom. But I'll show it. It's very, very nice. So here's the configuration. So this is a file that defines my whole system. It's a variable. My whole system is a variable. It has a locale, it has a time zone, it has a kernel. So here, for example, you can see that I choose to use a kernel with non-free firmware because I kind of need that Wi-Fi. But it comes outside of Geeks. It's not part of Geeks, that kernel. Anyways, user accounts, packages, services, everything goes in that. And so you have here GNOME desktop service type. And that's what gives me the GNOME desktop.
Okay. And with software availability, how do you find everything you normally find on other distributions?
Well, as I said, it's a free software distribution. Mm-hmm. It's even more than that. So already anything that is not free software or that has non-free firmware, malware, etc., you will not find. Mm-hmm. But you do not want to find it, ideally. however, there's more than that. Geeks requires full source bootstrapping. You cannot use binaries to build a package. Or you can do it by yourself, but you won't put it in Geeks itself. So for example, Rust, and most compilers today, they have a bootstrapping process because they are written, Rust is written in Rust. So you need a Rust compiler to compile Rust. So what do? You take a binary that exists already, and you compile it. But then that's not free software, because you just use a binary, and you don't know what it does. So you use, actually, the version before, and the version before that, and the version before that. And this is a very complicated process. So we have it for Rust, we have it for GCC, we have it for Zig. But for other things, we do not have it currently, because it's very hard to do. So there are entire languages that might be missing from Geeks itself, but you can get, albeit with a lower quality, from other package collections. So for example, Java, Java is extremely complicated to bootstrap because of Gradle. You know, when you run a Gradle, you just run Gradle W, which stands for Gradle Wrapper, which downloads Gradle for you and runs Gradle with Gradle. But to compile Gradle, you need Gradle, and this goes back many, many years ago. And at that point, Gradle needed some Java libraries, which do not exist anymore, that you cannot find anywhere. So if you want today to bootstrap Gradle, it's pretty much impossible for you. People have tried. People have got very far with it, and they are very talented. But it's very, very hard to do. And then Gradle depends on Kotlin, and suddenly you also have to do bootstrap Kotlin. And yeah, it's really a complicated process.
So are there any other questions from the audience? Okay.
What happens if you do want to run malware? For example, watch Amazon Prime.
Well, I will tell you a story, because I do run Geeks, and I did want to watch. I do own, my parents, my family has, a Netflix subscription, and I did want to use that to watch Deus Ex Machina. I was in Slovenia in a hotel, and at that point, I don't want to mess around with my system. So I run Firefox, usually, or here, LibreWolf, because as I said, Firefox has DRM, so you don't have it. But wait, DRM, what uses DRM? Netflix. So actually, you cannot use Firefox, or in this case, LibreWolf or IceCat, to run Netflix. It's by design. So what do? You use the collection of software that is non-free, but we still have it because, of course, for these kinds of purposes. So you have these things that's called non-geeks, it's a channel, and if I want the actual Firefox that comes with all the DRM and everything, see, I can get it from that channel. And yet, it still didn't work. So at that point, I gave up, and after 30 minutes of trying, I torrented the movie, and it was done in 5 minutes, and I had no problems. Which goes to show that DRMs make me pirate more instead of buying.
Are there any other questions in the audience? Okay.
First, a question about the name. Do I assume right that it's related to the GIL scheme? Your language you're using, that it's not GNU Linux anymore and the LS and other things are lost, or?
No, the name is GNU Geeks. That is the full name.
Yeah, but where's the Geeks coming from? What is it related to?
Geeks stands for?
To the GIL scheme?
Yeah.
There was an old distribution, an idea from Richard Stallman a long time ago, that all the Linux systems should be GNU Linux because everything is GNU, for example, the Windows system and other things. Is it now losing letters like the L and the N, or what does the name stand for?
So GNU Geeks used to stand for Guy Nix,
okay,
I'm pretty sure.
It was my assumption, but I just wanted to make
So the G is not GNU, but you have GNU Geeks, that's the full name. It's made in GNU Guile scheme. It runs the GNU Herd kernel if you want. So GNU Geeks is still very committed to GNU. It is also the free software distribution guideline. It's also a GNU thing, right?
I have one more question about your time machine getting old software compiled running. That all only works if someone already made package descriptions for the software I'm looking for. If no one put it in your package management system, I'm totally lost. Now assume I'm interested in the software which is in your package system, like Perl. Does it automatically can go back all the way to whatever really ancient versions? I'm an old gray bearded man, and sometimes I'm very interested in very old versions. I started with Perl version 3 and 4. Can I say, oh, make me Perl 4.0, whatever? I'm even more historically interested in typesetting systems, tech, LaTeX, things like that.
Yeah.
Can I get a binary for tech version 1.3, which was the very first one I had on my university machine?
Well, you can go, basically, yeah, in Geeks, it's more focused when it's made on reproducibility in the future. So it's not too focused on, I guess, making things from before 2013, because I think Geeks was made in 2013. However, you do have this channel called Geeks Old, which is, or Geeks Past, which is basically bringing software from the past to the present. Yeah, you would happily run Geeks Time Machine, but GNU Geeks didn't exist in 2010, and this has some binaries for you.
Okay, sounds interesting.
Yeah, so we can check out what you can find here. Maybe some Perl. Yeah, look, Perl 5. Would you like that?
Yeah, Perl 3 to 4.
Right. Well, you can have Perl 5.
The time before it got object-oriented.
2013.
You stuff it.
But I suppose, yeah, you could try yourself to package some older version of Perl, because I guess this also has older version of libraries. Maybe in 2013, it was still easy to compile Perl, so you can Geeks Time Machine at some point, and then compile
sure
Perl before, but yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So we have maybe time for one very, very short question. Otherwise, this would be the end. Does anybody have a short question? No? So then let's thank Noe again for his talk.